This is Fresh Air. Aram Saroyan's early writing would never be mistaken for that of his famous father, William Saroyan. William was best known for his works about family life, like The Time of Your Life and The Human Comedy. Aram started off writing one-word poems, but when he turned to prose, his family was often the subject. In his book Last Rites about the death of his father, Aram described a man totally unlike his public image. Aram wrote, "My father never liked me or my sister, and he never liked our mother either after an initial infatuation. In fact, he never liked anyone at all after an hour or two. No, no one except a stooge." Aram's parents got married and divorced twice by the time he was 8. His mother Carol has been married to Walter Matthau for the past 30 years. In the book Trio, Aram wrote about his mother and her celebrated friends Una Chaplin and Gloria Vanderbilt. His new book is about his own life and his coming of age as a writer in the 60s. It's called Friends in the World, The Education of a Writer. Here's Aram Saroyan reading an excerpt.
I grew up in the last generation for whom writers and poets were the genuine culture heroes. The corner paperback rack in a New York City drugstore was likely to contain serious literature in those days before the takeover of the mega book. Then in high school, the phenomenon of the Beat Generation occurred, echoed in England by the novelists and playwrights known as the Angry Young Men. There wasn't a serious contemporary I knew who wasn't engaged by all this. The idea of being a writer in the late 50s or early 60s was as engaging a possibility, if in the end a less likely one, as being a rock musician is today. And we looked to our poets and novelists much as kids today look to their rock stars, for the truth about life. As the child of a broken marriage, troubled by having a famous father with a public image that seemed the opposite of his private reality, I was in search of some kind of fundamental understanding upon which to base my own development. I had an uneasy sense of being estranged not only from the reality around me, but from my own deeper reality as well. The situation now seems to me to have had much to do with my being the child of a public figure and wanting to be in consensus with the public's view of my father. It was a classic double bind. If I accepted the reality of my father as I knew him, I had to do battle with the whole public perception of who he was. If, on the other hand, I tried to agree with the public perception of my parent, I would have to close off my own actual knowledge of who he was and, by extension, who I myself was. I turned to writing then as a possible means of coming to grips with the emotional confusion of my situation.
That's Aram Saroyan reading from his new memoir, Friends in the World, The Education of a Writer. Now, you say that you turned to writing as a possible means of coming to grips with the emotional confusion of your situation. But the writing you first became known for were your minimalist poems that were often only one word in length. So it was hardly this kind of, you know, expository narrative where you sorted through the emotional confusion of your life.
Well, you know, that was one of the interesting things that happened during the 60s. Here I was, the kid, the son of a famous writer, and coming out of a kind of a very rarefied scene, and probably slated to be standing in those shadows forever, except that the 60s happened, and suddenly my generation was what was really going on. It was a wonderful kind of liberation from all of that familial baggage. And I, you know, the poem L-I-G-H-G-H-T was chosen by Robert Duncan for an NEA award in 1967, and then became the subject of ongoing decades-long controversy. Because a congressman brought it up on the floor of Congress and said, this is a misuse of public funds. I was given $500, and the Chicago Review that printed the poem was given $250. But actually, I mean, that poem is, I think, briefly could be described as a reflection in a literary form of the whole stop-time reality that we knew during the 60s.
Let me stop you here to explain that the poem, it's one word, and it's a misspelling of the word light. And it's
Right. It has an extra G-H in it.
Right. So it's L-I-G-H-G-H-T. So why did you write the poem? What did it mean to you when you wrote it?
I think it meant that during the 60s, what happened was space got a little bit fatter. Time kind of slowed down, at least for my generation. And if you look at Warhol in painting or Donald Judd in sculpture and some of the serial kind of stuff that was going on in music at the time, this is really falls right in line with it. I think literature is the most conservative art form, so it was very... It was upsetting and a little and shocking as a literary form, more so than it would have been as if I had done it, for instance, just as a poster.
So were you able to give poetry readings with one-word poems like that?
Sure. Haven't you heard me read crickets?
No, I haven't.
Crickets, 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 crickets. Crickets.
Now, you were often writing while high, right? And I was wondering if the drug experience affected the kind of writing
that
you were
was
doing.
That would happen. It wasn't primary. It wasn't an absolutely necessary part of the process of composition. What would happen was I would go through phases with marijuana specifically, where I would sometimes use it as a part of the process of composition. I would smoke. What happened to me ultimately was the reason I stopped smoking marijuana was because I found that there were certain things that I wanted to do as a writer that were absolutely impossible using marijuana. Things like writing narrative prose.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, for a young man as I was, as tense as I was, as kind of burdened with all this extra parental type of historical baggage, it was liberating for a moment, and I learned something from it. I think Norman Mailer says, you know, whatever you get out of it is it's a trade-off. You know, you lose something as well. I stopped. I experimented for, let's say, periods of 2 to 3 months, and then would stop, and then. Do it again. And what I found was that as I went along, it became less and less useful to me.
My guest is Aram Saroyan. He's written a memoir about his development as a writer in the 60s. It's called Friends in the World. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. Writer Aram Saroyan is my guest. When you stopped writing minimalist poetry, one of the subjects that you wrote about and continued to write about was family, your own mm-hmm. family, you know, your wife and your child and then children, and then the family that you were born into, your father and mm-hmm. and your mother and your mother's mm-hmm. friends. mm-hmm. Tell me mm-hmm. why writing about family has been such a central subject to you over the years.
I know for my father, the idea of a family was absolutely one of the deepest ambitions of his life, and the fact that it failed in his life was I think maybe the deepest disappointment for him. And he just kind of passed that on to me. He said, you know, geez, this is what it's all about, you know. And I was lucky enough to meet my wife Galen in 1967, and find a partner, someone that I could really move through the world with, and we began a family in 1970, and in a way, it was a kind of passage out of the 60s. It was, you know, a kind of crash course in the here and now, and at the same time, when you do have a family, I think when you have children, your own parents' struggle and your grandparents' struggle comes clearer, comes into a kind of relief. But, you know, essentially the book that began my writing about my own family was Last Rites, which was a journal I kept when my father was dying of cancer during April and May of 1981. And what that was for me was essentially naming and then setting down a lot of the baggage that I'd had growing up as the son of a famous writer who actually was a very complicated, interesting, very human guy, not at all the literary Santa Claus that he was essentially portrayed as in the media.
Your mother has a forthcoming memoir, and
right.
I've just been paging through the galleys of it. I haven't had a chance to read the whole thing, but mm-hmm. I've read that you're not mentioned at all in the memoir, that her mm-hmm. two children with William Saroyan aren't mentioned in it, and I wonder how you feel about that.
You know, that's a whole other story, and I've kind of maintained a kind of no comment posture at this point, which I believe is the way for me to go. She has a book coming out. I think it's good for people to see the book, read the book, read the excerpts, and you know, I'm a writer. Ultimately, I will, you know, I'll be. There's more on it, but I don't think this is the time for me to comment on it.
Mm-hmm. When you were younger, one of the things you wanted to do was to start a press, a small publishing company that would be to its generation what Lawrence Ferlinghetti's company, City Lights, was to his. How close do you feel that you came to that?
We didn't get too close, but we did publish a series of 8 or 9 pocket poet standardized format books, including Patti Smith's first book, books by Gerard Malanga and Tom Weatherly and Ron Padgett and Tom Clark and Ted Berrigan, and we had a good time, and we, you know, it was a kind of a communal event within our circle of writers.
What do you think is left for you of that sense of a generational connection?
Well, I'm 2 years shy of 50, and I believe that the 60s per se is misrepresented, trivialized, and in certain ways obliterated in our history. We have a habit of doing that, and it was an extraordinary period, a period of idealism and communalism, where really what you had was not a political revolution, but a cultural revolution. And, I'm real proud to have been a part of it, and I'm now using it as a writer. It's odd. It's paradoxical when you write a book about the 60s, because essentially we're talking about a time where we thought we'd come to the end of history as we'd known it, and to now be writing about it and using it as like an historical resource is paradoxical.
In the early 80s, you moved from Bolinas, which you described as a stronghold of literary bohemia, into the geography of the American middle class, Ridgefield, Connecticut. I believe you've mm-hmm. moved back to California since mm-hmm. then. Where do you feel like you most belong physically now?
My own sense is that my childhood was bi-coastal, and I am, most of my books have bi-coastal settings, but I feel closest, where I'm living now in Southern California, I feel the most at home as, that I've ever felt.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you're still a part of a literary bohemia?
I feel loyalty to the spirit of that time. I feel, for instance, that there's a terrible backlash going on right now in poetry, where you really have you don't see the writers of my generation of that 60s period in the anthologies at all. And it's not because they're not accomplished writers. I regret that, because what's happened with poetry is that very few people read it anymore. And it's hard to remember that during the late 60s, there was a huge audience for poetry, and it was because these writers wrote for the larger audience in the larger world, and that's something we need. And I'm sorry that it's not out there the way it should be.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Aram Saroyan's new memoir, Friends in the World, The Education of a Writer, is published by Coffeehouse Press. This is Fresh Air.